100 million. Just think about that number for a second.
It's huge.
That's the estimated number of marine species living along Pakistan's coastline. 1,050 kilometers of coast.
And covering 22 major animal groups, it's truly astonishing, really.
Definitely. And it's the perfect way to kick off our exploration today, isn't it? We're diving into the really fascinating, vital, and maybe often overlooked marine life of Pakistan.
Exactly. So welcome, everyone. Today, we're doing a deep dive based on a guide to the marine life of Pakistan.
Think of this as your shortcut, maybe. A way to quickly grasp this incredibly rich ecosystem.
Why it matters so much, and importantly, the big challenges it's up against right now.
Right. So our mission today, for you listening, is pretty clear. First up, we want to unpack the sheer variety of life calling these waters home.
Then we'll sort of navigate through the key ecosystems that actually support all this life.
And finally, we really need to understand the main threats. What's putting this vital part of the Northern Arabian Sea at risk?
And it's not just about the wildlife, is it? There's the whole blue economy aspect, too. Pakistan's marine resources have significant economic and strategic importance.
Makes it incredibly relevant. So where do we start? The coastline itself.
Let's start there. Charting the territory, you could say. That 1,050-kilometer coastline shared by Sindh and Balochistan, it's not just one uniform strip.
No, it's more like a patchwork.
A mosaic. That's a great word for it. A complex mix of interconnected ecosystems. That's really the key to its biodiversity.
Okay, so what makes up this mosaic?
Yeah.
You've got estuaries, right? Where big rivers like the Indus meet the sea.
Exactly. And that mixing of fresh and salt water creates these incredibly nutrient-rich zones, perfect for algae, plankton, the base of the food web.
Which makes them super important as nurseries for young fish and crustaceans. Yeah, like disproportionately important.
Way more important than their size would suggest. Then you have the mangroves, especially down in the Indus Delta.
Nature's coastal defenders. They stop erosion, but they're also crucial breeding spots.
Absolutely essential. And then moving on, you find coral reefs. Maybe not huge areas, but critical nonetheless.
This is like Astala and Cherna Islands.
Precisely. Real biodiversity hotspots, packed with life. And we can't forget the lagoons and mudflats either.
Vital for birds, especially migratory ones. And endangered turtles need them for nesting and feeding.
Mm-hmm. And then further out, the continental shelf. Deeper waters, driving ocean productivity.
It's amazing how they all connect. And speaking of scale, Pakistan's exclusive economic zone, the EEZ, that's a massive strategic asset.
Huge. It started at 200 nautical miles, but then in 2015, it got a major boost.
Right. The UN recognized their claim to an extended continental shelf, pushed it out to 350 nautical miles.
That's it. Added nearly 50,000 square kilometers. So the total is now around 240,000 square kilometers.
Wow. What does that mean in practical terms?
Well, it gives Pakistan much greater potential for managing its marine resources. We're talking fishing, aquaculture, maybe even offshore oil, gas, minerals. If done sustainably, of course.
Of course. And within that huge zone, there must be specific areas that are just ecologically crucial, real hotspots.
Definitely. Take Astala Island down in Balochistan, Pakistan's first marine protected area, and for good reason.
What makes it so special?
It's got rare corals, vital turtle nesting beaches, and it's a key stopover for migratory birds.
Okay. And Cherna Island, closer to Karachi, you said.
Yeah. Vibrant corals, popular for marine tourism. But that closeness to the city makes it vulnerable. Overfishing, pollution, you know the drill.
Sadly, yes. And you mentioned Miani Hor Lagoon, too.
Right, a brackish lagoon, unique mangroves, really important fish nursery.
It paints a picture of incredible natural wealth.
Mm.
But as the guide points out, this diversity is under increasing pressure.
It is. You see this stunning abundance, this intricate web we've just outlined.
But it's facing serious threats. So let's shift focus now to those pressures, maybe starting with the sheer variety of life itself. That 100 million species figure is just mind-boggling.
It really is. And a lot of credit goes to the Marine Reference Collection and Resource Center, the MRCRC at the University of Karachi. They've done amazing work documenting it.
Based on Dr. Quddusi B. Kazmi's inventory, Marine Faunal Diversity of Pakistan.
That's the one. 22 animal phyla, an estimated 100 million species. It's hard to even comprehend that number.
Like an underwater tapestry, just woven with countless different threads.
That's a lovely way to put it. Think about the mollusks, sea slugs, octopuses, clams. Their presence often tells you about healthy sediments, diverse habitats.
Right. And then the echinoderms. Sea stars, sea cucumbers.
The unsung heroes of the seabed.
Yeah.
Crucial for nutrient cycling. And then, of course, the cnidarians, jellyfish, corals, anemones, fundamental for those reef systems near Cherna and Astela.
And you can't forget the crustaceans, crabs, lobsters, shrimps. They're not just ecologically important, they're the backbone of the commercial fisheries, aren't they?
Absolutely central to the fisheries. And we shouldn't overlook marine mammals either. Occasional dolphin or whale sightings offshore really show the ecological range of the area.
It's incredible. And the guide mentions endemic species too, things found only there.
Yes, like a particular type of sea snail in Balochistan's intertidal zones. Very specific habitat, very fragile existence. It really highlights the need to protect those unique spots.
And sadly, it also mentions historical records suggesting, well, local extinctions, species rarely seen anymore.
Yeah, it's sobering. Some colonial-era documents hint at a possibly richer past, and there are still relatively unexplored areas, like methane seeps near Makran. Who knows what's still out there, undiscovered?
It really hammers home the need for more research, doesn't it? Updated taxonomic work.
Critically important. We need to know what we have, what we might be losing, and what's still hidden. The guide rightly credits key players like MRCRC, WWF Pakistan, the Zoological Society.
And researchers like Dr. Kazmi and Mr. Moazzam Khan.
But it also points out big knowledge gaps, the deep sea, microscopic life, how different species interact. It's complex.
So strengthening research infrastructure, training new scientists, that's essential.
Absolutely. We need
Yeah.
that foundation.
Okay, moving up the food chain a bit. Let's talk sharks and rays, apex predators, mesopredators. Vital for ecosystem balance.
Hugely important roles. But the guide raises serious flags about their landing sites, Karachi Fish Harbor, Gwadar, and others.
What's the situation?
It's pretty concerning. A study back in 2017-2018 found 41 shark species from 11 families being landed.
41 species.
And get this, Karachi Fish Harbor alone accounted for almost 87% of all those landings.
Wow. Which types are most common?
Mostly Carcharhinidae, the requiem sharks. They made up about half the catch, 23 species. Then Charachidae, the hound sharks, around 35%. And Hemiscyllidae, bamboo sharks, often near reefs, about 16%.
Okay, but here's the kicker, right? The guide mentioned something alarming.
Yes. The sheer number of immature juvenile sharks being caught.
That just sounds completely unsustainable, taking them out before they can even reproduce.
Exactly. The guide calls it a juvenile crisis. It's largely driven by bycatch, unintentional capture in commercial fishing gear.
So the gear isn't selective enough.
Often not. Plus, there's a lack of effective regulations, no gear modifications enforced, no minimum size limits for landings, and no protected nursery areas for these young sharks.
And sharks grow slowly, don't they?
Yeah.
Relatively few offspring.
Very slow growing, long reproductive cycles, few pups usually. So this level of fishing, especially on the young ones, can crash populations really fast.
What's the international view on their conservation status?
It paints a grim picture. The IUCN Red List classifies 85% of the shark species landed in Pakistan as critically endangered, vulnerable, or near threatened.
That's staggering.
And it doesn't stop there. Nine species are on Appendix 2 of the sites, meaning their trade needs strict regulation. Eight of those are also on Appendix 2 of CMS for migratory species, requiring international cooperation.
But is Pakistan acting on these listings?
That's the problem. The guide points out a lack of comprehensive national action plans for these species and inconsistent enforcement of those international trade rules. It's a major gap.
And the landing data itself shows a decline, right?
A dramatic decline. Between 1993 and 2019, well, landings plummeted. From around 55,000 metric tons in 1999 down to just under 5,800 in 2019.
That's almost a 90% drop.
Almost 90%. It screams severe depletion. We urgently need science-based conservation, sanctuaries, gear restrictions, proper trade monitoring, the works.
Okay, let's shift gears to another critical but maybe more fragile ecosystem, coral reefs. The guide says they're quite limited in Pakistan. Mostly Astela, some patches near Gwadar and Cherna.
That's right. Limited in area, but their ecological value is huge. Biodiversity hotspots, providing food, shelter, breeding grounds, all that.
But why are they so limited there?
They need specific conditions, clear water, rocky bottoms, so their distribution is patchy. Astela, Cherna, parts of the Gwadar coast. But honestly, even where they exist, they're not always well documented or monitored.
And they face a whole barrage of threats, don't they? Sedimentation, overfishing.
All of the above. Sediment from coastal development, deforestation, dredging. It can literally smother the corals or block sunlight.
And overfishing, how does that impact reefs?
Well, if you remove too many herbivorous fish, like parrotfish, they're the ones that keep algae growth in check on the reef. Without them, algae can overwhelm the corals.
Ah, right. And then there's pollution.
Yep. Plastics, chemical runoff, it weakens the corals, makes them prone to disease, prone to bleaching, and the lack of enforced regulations just lets these things continue.
Which brings us to climate change. Coral bleaching is a global headline. How's it affecting Pakistan's reefs?
It's a major threat there, too. Rising sea temperatures, more frequent marine heat waves in the Arabian Sea, they cause that bleaching. Corals get stressed, expel their symbiotic algae, their food source, and can die if the stress lasts too long.
Direct temperature impact.
And there's ocean acidification, too. More CO2 in the atmosphere means more gets absorbed by the ocean, making it more acidic.
Which makes it harder for corals to build their skeletons.
Exactly. Less available carbonate ions, so it's a double whammy. Heat, stress, and difficulty building their structures. We've seen a definite decline in reef health there over the last 20 years or so.
It sounds pretty bleak. Does the guide offer any hope? Any paths to restoration?
It does offer pathways, yes, but it requires serious sustained effort. Things like coral restoration projects, nurseries, artificial reefs could help in degraded areas, especially near Cherna and Astala.
Expanding marine protected areas beyond just Astala seems crucial too.
Absolutely. More areas need that legal protection with effective enforcement. And sustainable reef tourism, if it's managed very carefully with trained operators, restricted zones, could potentially help fund conservation.
And collaboration is key between communities and scientists.
Vital. WWF, Pakistan, the University of Karachi, local communities, they all need to work together. That's the only way for long-term success.
Okay, let's zoom out again. The overall impact of human activities. The guide mentions industrial waste, sewage, plastics, oil spills, agricultural runoff. It's a long list.
It is. And the contrast with the natural richness is just stark. Karachi Harbor is really highlighted as a major pollution epicenter.
The numbers are shocking, aren't they? Hundreds of millions of gallons of untreated sewage daily.
And thousands of tons of solid waste every single day. Coming from homes, industry, illegal dumping. It's a toxic soup. And it devastates marine life and food webs.
And that Greater Karachi Sewage Plan, still not really implemented.
Largely unimplemented, unfortunately, a missed opportunity.
And then plastic pollution, a global nightmare, and Pakistan's a contributor.
A significant contributor, sadly. Millions of tons enter the ocean globally each year. You see it. Bottles, bags, fishing nets breaking down into microplastic.
Getting into the food chain, entangling animals.
Exactly, and releasing chemicals as they degrade. Then there's eutrophication, that's excess nutrients from sewage and fertilizer runoff.
Which leads to algal blooms.
Right. These massive blooms grow fast, then die and decompose. That decomposition uses up all the oxygen in the water, creating dead zones where basically nothing can survive.
It's a cascade effect. And oil spills are another factor, like the Tasman Spirit disaster.
That was a major one back in 2003, yes. But there's also routine shipping discharges, bilge water, garbage, sewage, even noise pollution from ships. And don't forget agricultural runoff, carrying pesticides and fertilizers into the sea.
Karachi seems like a case study in this decline, right? Areas that used to be rich in life, seeing fewer species now.
Definitely. Places like Manora Channel, Sandspit, historically known for biodiversity, now showing clear signs of degradation due to unregulated urban sprawl and pollution. Mangroves, corals, estuaries are all suffering.
Weakening the coast's natural defenses, too.
And without serious action, the guide warns, Karachi faces potentially irreversible biodiversity loss. It's all interconnected with climate change and deforestation, too.
Which brings us squarely to climate change itself. It's not some future problem. It's hitting coastal ecosystems and communities now in Sindh and Balochistan.
That's crucial to understand. It's happening now. We're seeing the effects of rising sea surface temperatures, more frequent marine heat waves.
Disrupting fish spawning, forcing them into deeper water.
Right. And causing that coral bleaching we discussed in places like Astala and Cherna, it hits biodiversity hard, and it directly impacts fisheries-dependent livelihoods.
And you mentioned the double threat to corals acidification alongside warming.
Exactly. More CO2 absorption lowers the ocean's pH, making it harder for corals and shellfish to build their skeletons because there are fewer carbonate ions available. It attacks their very structure.
And the human impact isn't just lost biodiversity. Coastal communities are really feeling it.
Oh, absolutely. Fish catches decline, leading to economic hardship. Then you have more frequent and intense storms, cyclones, coastal flooding, damaging homes, infrastructure, displacing people.
Plus saltwater getting into freshwater sources and farmland.
Saline intrusion, yes. A growing problem near the coast. It's a whole suite of negative impacts, all linked.
And is Pakistan's national climate policy really addressing these marine issues specifically?
That's where the guide points out some significant gaps. There isn't a strong, targeted marine component in the current national climate policy. Not enough emphasis on marine risks or resilience planning.
Specific gaps like
lack of early warning systems for marine heat waves, poor integration of marine science into adaptation planning, few localized adaptation plans for coastal communities, and fragmented coordination between agencies. Without tackling these, the long-term impacts could be really severe, potentially irreversible.
It really sounds like a disconnect between policy on paper and action on the ground. The guide mentions issues with governance, policy implementation, public awareness.
Yes, that's a key theme. Pakistan is party to many international environmental agreements, has national regulations, but the actual doing, the enforcement, is awfully weak. Coordination is fragmented, and public awareness just isn't where it needs to be.
We have international laws like NELS, MARPOL, the London Convention, but national enforcement is the challenge.
Often, yes. The capacity is lacking funding, staff, technical know-how. Sometimes the political backing isn't strong enough, especially when it comes to regulating industries, say, around Karachi Harbor. So violations like illegal dumping, plastic pollution, oil discharges, they often go unchecked.
And just knowing what's happening seems difficult. Monitoring is a hurdle.
A huge hurdle. You need good real-time data on water quality, pollution, biodiversity trends to manage effectively. Pakistan lacks that comprehensive monitoring infrastructure.
No central database. No public dashboard showing marine health.
Not really. Environmental protection agencies often have tight budgets and tend to react to problems rather than proactively monitoring. And there's underinvestment in modern tech satellites, monitoring buoys, remote sensing that could give a much better picture.
And responsibility is spread across different ministries. Climate change, maritime affairs, fisheries.
Exactly. Defense, environment, multiple players, which can lead to overlapping mandates, maybe conflicting policies, slow enforcement, siloed data. There's no single unified authority or national strategy for marine governance.
And the role of the public. Awareness and participation seem underestimated.
Hugely underestimated, yet absolutely critical. In many coastal areas, there's limited understanding of the long-term consequences of pollution or overfishing. Marine education isn't really in schools or prominent in the media.
So what's needed there?
We need proper green education campaigns, marine awareness built into the curriculum, support for community-led conservation projects, maybe training citizen scientists to help monitor things. You need public buy-in, a culture of conservation for any of this to stick.
So, looking forward then, how do we move towards actually protecting this incredible marine life sustainably? The guide stresses science, governance, community engagement, innovation.
Yes, it's got to be a holistic approach, grounded in science, driven by effective governance, involving communities meaningfully, and embracing innovation. Protecting the ocean isn't just an environmental issue. It's about food security, climate resilience, culture, economic potential, everything.
And marine protected areas, MPAs, are a key tool. The idea is to expand beyond just Astala.
Definitely. A well-managed MPA network is a proven strategy globally, suggesting places like Cherna Island, Miani Hor Lagoon, key parts of the Guadarrama coast. These need clear boundaries, proper enforcement, ideally with community support, to allow recovery.
The guide also mentions learning from other countries, a green theory perspective.
Right. That perspective emphasizes balancing ecological needs with public participation. Looking at places like Denmark, Indonesia, South Africa, they show how investing in monitoring MPA networks, co-management with locals, and sustainable ecotourism can really work.
And empowering communities, citizen scientists.
Yeah.
That keeps coming up as vital.
Because it is.
Yeah.
Getting local people involved in monitoring, doing reef checks or cleanups, giving them the tools and knowledge, it builds that crucial sense of ownership, makes conservation efforts far more likely to succeed long term.
And finally, the blue economy idea. Protecting marine life can actually drive sustainable economic growth.
That's the key insight. It's not an either. Well-managed ecotourism, sustainable fisheries with proper regulations and gear, maybe even marine biotechnology exploring compounds for medicine. These can create jobs and revenue while preserving the ocean.
So it's an investment, not just a cost.
Exactly. An investment in Pakistan's future, its prosperity, and maybe even its leadership in regional conservation and innovation.
So, wrapping up our deep dive today, we've really seen the scale of biodiversity along Pakistan's coast. It's almost unbelievable. We've explored how these different ecosystems are all interconnected, all vital.
But we've also confronted the really serious threats: pollution, overfishing, climate change impacts. It's a complex mix of challenges.
And it's a crystal clear that we need stronger governance, policies that are actually enforced consistently, and much, much greater public awareness and involvement. That seems urgent to protect this natural heritage.
Absolutely. Understanding these issues, getting your head around the complexity is just the first crucial step, whether it's for your own knowledge or maybe it informs something you do professionally.
Hopefully, this deep dive has given you a few of those aha moments. Shed some light on why this matters so much and why action is needed now.
We certainly hope so. It's both incredibly important and incredibly urgent.
And maybe a final thought to leave you with. Thinking about the ocean's massive role in our planet's health overall, what innovative solutions, maybe even unexpected ones, can you imagine that could help build a sustainable future for Pakistan's amazing marine life?
Or perhaps, since understanding is just step one, as we've said, what specific research or maybe what local community projects do you think could make the biggest difference in protecting these underwater treasures?
Good questions to ponder. And if you do want to dig deeper into any of this, the guide itself, the research centers, the scientists we mentioned, they're all great places to start looking.